This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Experts agree teaching children about money early is the best way to prepare them to make informed financial decisions as adults. But few schools have financial literacy programs, and parents don't often talk to their kids about money. Pat Burke, a CPA and attorney and managing partner at the law firm Burke & Schindler, has published a new book to help children understand business and economics. He joins us to share some of the insights he hopes children learn from his book, Swing for the Fences. Also, financial advisor Chris DeSimio joins us. Good afternoon. Good to see both of you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And you can be part of the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Pat, tell me about why you decided to write this book in the first place.
Well, it's interesting. I come from a family of entrepreneurs. Almost all the baby boomer generations own their own business or are, you know, lawyers or CPAs. But no one in the Gen Y or in the millennial generation has started a business. And until actually my daughter is starting one right now, but a blowout salon in Oakley. So she told me I had to mention that, so I did. Ellie, that's for you. Zephyr, it's called. Anyway.
That's your one free plug.
I got you. Okay. I understand. So the my wife said, hey, why do you think it is that the kids in the next generation didn't start businesses? And I said, I don't know. Maybe did we make it look too hard, or was it just, or, you know, just weren't motivated to do it? So I thought, well, maybe if they knew how much fun it was to own their own business and being in control of your own destiny, maybe we could get kids more interested in that. So really, that was the primary reason that I picked up a pen and wrote this.
What's great about it, Pat, as I read through the book, is there a kid, you know, is there a young man or young woman who likes baseball or softball who doesn't remember, and as you open the book, that first warm weekend,
right,
and you're on your bike, and, you know, the world seems like a happy place, and you've got, you know, you're looking forward to the full year. And so you open the book with little Tommy, and he's on his bike, and he's looking forward to that first day of baseball practice, but he's got to have a bat. And I couldn't believe it when I said, he goes to the hardware store, and there's this brand new spanking aluminum bat, and it's $220. And I thought, wait a minute, that can't be right. A bat can't cost $200.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I went online.
Oh,
if you've got kids who play, you know that.
I went, because, you know, baseball bats for us is just, you know, a little wooden thing. I went online, and some of these things were $450.
Oh, yes.
I was shocked.
Just like golf clubs, the composite, and it's expensive stuff.
Yeah, and in the book, you talk about how he becomes fixated on this bat.
Right.
And his dad, who is a CPA also.
Of course. So
perhaps autobiographical.
Somewhat, yeah.
Instead of just saying, okay, look, you know, here's the money, kid. Go, you know, get out of my way, go buy it. He literally gives him a reason to buy into it.
Right.
And how do those traits, you know, the idea of working something, earning something for yourself, how transferable are those from parents to kids?
Great question. You know, I think that that most parents, and I think, you know, most of us grew up in homes less affluent than the one we're in now. And I think most of us feel like, boy, it would have been nice when I was a kid to have gotten that bat, and we didn't get it. So the tendency is, if Junior wants the bat, Junior gets the bat. And I think that one of the issues associated with that is, Lord knows that our society has produced great consumers, right?
And it's 2/3 of the economy.
Yes. But, you know, revenue is a cycle. It has to be earned, and then it needs to be spent. And I think that kids sort of look at their parents as an ATM, and they really don't buy into the idea that they can actually earn some money to buy. And cool stuff costs money. You know, the coolest stuff costs more money than the not cool stuff, yeah. Right?
So. Especially baseball bats nowadays.
Oh, yeah, if you know that.
Does work ethic come into play in this, Pat? You know, it's teaching kids how to earn something as opposed to just hitting mom and dad up for the money?
Well, you know, it's interesting when you think about the idea of work ethic. I think, you know, if you're really enjoying what you're doing, you're not thinking about it as work ethic. You're just accomplishing a task that you think is fun and has an outcome that's profitable or to your benefit. And I think, you know, people who are task-oriented anyway, you know, can be good entrepreneurs, but now the task is sort of created by you, executed by you for your benefit. That's a good thing. So I think that people can become, the ethic is sort of follows the reward. It's like, now I remember when I got my first check with my name on it, I mean, I got goosebumps. I thought, this is cool, you know?
Did that check also have your first Social Security taxes and other withholdings with your name on it?
Actually, I'm talking about my first check when I owned my own business. So, yeah, okay. Yes, it was much more fun getting it gross than net, that's for sure, Chris.
You know, you say you're a serial entrepreneur. Why do you say that?
Well, you know, I think that and most entrepreneurs are, you know, just they get an idea and – notwithstanding everybody telling you you need a business plan, you need a year's worth of expenses in the bank, most entrepreneurs just go out and, frankly, and go off a little bit half-cocked. And I've been involved with some ventures that didn't make sense, that didn't work, and the ones that do make sense do work. So what? And I just, if I think I see a better way to do things, I tend to go forward and try to make that happen.
Do we need more serial entrepreneurs in the world?
Well, you know, I think we need more people to be open to the idea of that. I think that, you know, so many parents I think that, gosh, I don't want my kid to work as hard as I did. Or it's like, gee, all my life I have been financially not as stable as I hoped. And I really think being a corporate executive or a doctor or a lawyer or whatever those things, that's going to be the key to financial freedom. But with, you know, doctors are experiencing pressures. The law industry is in upheaval. You know, corporate executives are likely to be right-sized or downsized. I think, you know, if you want to work for one company the rest of your life and have increasingly interesting things to do, it may make most sense to work for one that has your name on the door.
You know, there actually is, I think, a college in the Big Ten that has special training for serial entrepreneurs.
Well,
it's the Kellogg School of Management.
Is it? I mean, sorry. So many colleges now. Actually, you know, our alma mater, UD, has a tremendous entrepreneurship program. So it's, I think more schools are focusing on it because they need to. I think that, you know, the idea of the corporate life being, you know, the way to financial freedom is really not as accurate as it once was. I won't say you can't get there. Of course you can.
But it's not as linear.
And, you know, we do a lot of recruiting. It's one of our businesses. And it's amazing when you look at a resume now. It used to be you'd see a change every 5, 6 years, maybe or 10. Now you get somebody who's 30 years old and there's 7 entries on it. And that's common.
You know, as I read through the book, it occurred to me that this is a kind of book that's not just for kids, that this is a kind of book that parents should read with their kids.
Exactly.
Because parents, I think, would see a lot of themselves in this book as they used to be when they were that age, because you really are seeing the world of finance through the eyes of, what, an 11 or 12-year-old?
I don't say on purpose, but that's about right. You know, that's what I think he's supposed to be, old enough to I had one of my original editors was an 11-year-old, and he told me there were several words in there he had to look up. But then, of course, his dad said, well, that's good. You should be looking those up. So, but it is a book that I think lends itself to – I mean, you know, there's some complicated ideas in there. There's supply and demand. There's costing. There's brand building and extension. So, you know, a parent might even learn a little bit from that and explain, you know, how, you know, a brand like Abercrombie, you know, broadened itself from a fishing store to a clothing store and how they made, you know, billions of dollars doing it.
We're talking with Pat Burke. He's just published a new book to help kids understand business and economics. Book's called Swing for the Fences. And if you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can join us by calling 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Pat, did you pick a baseball theme because it was relatable, or was there something in your past life got you there?
It's interesting. I started writing this book a couple of springs ago, and it was just like you discussed it, Chris. It was a real warm weekend in March, and I just thought about, you know, all sort of hope springs eternal in March with baseball season, and everybody's going to make the All-Star team, and we're going to be a group. So that's really the probably if I'd have started it in the fall, it would have been about football. But honestly, and I love the Reds, and I do love baseball, so that it was kind of natural.
You know, how many business owners go through the same process that your hero of the book, Swing for the Fences, did, where they know they have something they want? They know they're working towards a goal, and he sees the opportunity. There's this new school being built right across the street from where he lives. And the guy, the people running the construction say, hey, kid, go get us some soda pop. He says, no, wait a minute. There's the idea. We can sell lemonade. We'll make a lemonade stand. And that process that he uses to engage his mom, his dad cautions him about starting a business and the startup costs. And like you said, brand extension, getting them to try it free the first time. All those things are classic how to get a business started.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Probably in the book, Tommy does more market research than the average entrepreneur. But I think, you know, the point you make about it being sort of episodic or you know, sort of related to an immediate need, I think a lot of entrepreneurs sort of, you know, here's the stuff I like, or here's the thing, here's a gap in the marketplace that I see. And, you know, I think I can do that better, or I want to be the first mover on that. And I think that's great. But one of the things I always caution my my potential entrepreneurs is, you know, you have to have some sustainable advantage over your competition, or you're going to be in a price war, and you don't want to be in that spot. And that's one of the things when Tommy has the competition and he wants to start cutting prices, and his dad reminds him, "Hey, your margins aren't that great to begin with, Tommy. So you really want to be careful about that."
It's interesting because Tommy learns a lot of different lessons. He learns about competition. He learns about diversifying his business. He learns about the cost factors that come into play. So there's an evolution as the book goes along.
Yeah, we're trying to, you know, no one child would go through that many things over the course of a few months, but you know, I had to keep it moving along. But all those things do hit most entrepreneurs at some point in the arc, right? So yeah. You got to hit them on.
Yeah, you know, in your practice as a CPA and an attorney, how frequently do you see successful business people who might own, you know, any kind of company here bring their children into the business with them and almost have to walk them through the same kind of process?
Well, it's funny, and there's a well-known sort of syndrome called PI, which is the first generation is passionate about the business, the second generation is interested, and the third generation is entitled. So, you know, what I see is the children of first-generation entrepreneurs have heard all about this business at the dinner table their whole life. So they kind of walk in, if they've been listening, and some do and some don't, and they kind of almost grab the ball and start running with it immediately. So they kind of get it at a higher level. Interestingly enough, as a sidebar, is that the third generation doesn't, because the second generation probably had it a little easier, and they probably might connect more with mom or dad's hobbies than they do with the business. And so they're great golfers, but they're not great entrepreneurs.
Now, Pat, a lot of experts say that financial literacy and financial education are lacking these days. Do you agree with that?
Well, I do. And I think that as interesting as this is and as essential as it is to getting ahead and seeing if you do want to do this. I mean, we just talked about entrepreneurship programs at colleges are relatively new. And, you know, a lot of times that if you're in a college prep program in a high school, you know, you're sort of steered away from business courses like accounting or marketing. It's like, well, you know, not everybody's going to be a philosophy teacher. So I think it's important that people understand that business is interesting and fun, not to mention, we hope, profitable, right?
Well, I've never hurt anybody. You know, when you go through this book, when you go through the process of writing a book, there has to be in the back of your mind stories from your own practice, not only from your own background, but people with whom you've worked who have run into these same kinds of things. What percentage of the successes and challenges that our entrepreneurs go through are derived from your real life experiences?
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, I think everything in there, I've had that problem with someone, whether they're extending a brand beyond their own competency, whether they're not and don't understand costing. They don't understand that the way to beat the competition is not by providing a better product or service, but by cutting prices. And those are all, you know, I've been through those discussions with entrepreneurs over the years. And, you know, most of them, you know, everybody makes a mistake or two. That's how they learn. The trick is, you know, be right more than half the time. I always tell people that business is really like being a weekend golfer. You know, you just have to avoid the big mistakes and you'll be fine. But you don't have to hit a home run or a 300-yard drive. Just keep it in the short grass, right?
Did your parents have an influence on what you wrote in this book? Did they teach you about earning to buy something? And is this something you're passing along to your own kids?
Well, as best I can. On the second question, as best I can.
they have to be willing to listen.
They have to be willing to listen. And they're pretty good kids, and they're they understand money pretty well. I don't know that they understand. I think they're my daughters are probably better consumers than they should be. Is that a fair way to put that? My parents were not. My father was a lawyer and a judge, and was careful with money. And you know, there was just. And actually, my father died when I was 14. And then it was like we had sort of a crisis mentality. So if you needed something, you had to go out and earn the money yourself and buy it. You know, so the my situation at UD, Chris, you know, I didn't know what a pair of topsiders were, but when I saw them, I thought I could use a pair of those, and I saw what they cost, and it's like, new, can't afford those.
So do you suggest a parent who thinks their kid should read this book, do you start by having them earn the money for the book as the first lesson, maybe?
That'd be a great idea. I think it's – although at that point, they probably – you know, I'd rather have them know about it and then maybe learn the joys of having a business than making them pay for their own schooling here. Maybe they go halvesies on it. I don't know.
What are some of the ways that parents can best help kids overcome these setbacks? Because it's been said that, and Henry Ford, for I'm just as an example, he failed in business many times.
Oh, yes.
Lincoln failed in politics many times.
Many great innovators have
failed many times. And they learn from the failure, and they come back bigger and better. What are the best ways parents can, you know, work with the young magnates of the future?
Well, that's a great question.
To help them kind of get over the hump and to not take it too personally.
Well, I hate to keep using sports analogies, but since baseball is we're in the season and the book is predicated on that, you think about, you know, a great hitter is a hitter that hits over 300,
yeah.
You know. And I think I'd say entrepreneurs probably like to hit 600, but they don't hit – they don't bat 1,000. And I would say, you know, I've been I've helped start over 80 companies. And so that's 80 different entrepreneurs, and I'd say those entrepreneurs are responsible for another 100-plus businesses, and they've almost every one of them have been in some business that didn't work. It's almost like, you know, it's like if you don't fail a couple times, you're not taking enough risk. And I think that's one of the things that I think people need to know about you know, business is risky. But it's one of the risks, you know, the deck is stacked in your favor because you can control the risk, because you can control the amount of effort you put forth.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation with Pat Burke, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Pat, do you think that it's so important to become financially literate, isn't it? It's an empowering thing.
Oh, it really is. And you think about how many people, I mean, you know, we have in our accounting practice, you know, we have, you know, 1,000 individual clients, and you know, many, many of them are very astute in their business and are successful in their business. But you know, you can get. I just saw this information in the paper. I think it was in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, the day before. 47% of Americans don't have 4 weeks worth of expenses saved. That I don't, and it's oddly enough, you know, I'm sure that's probably more common in the lower economic brackets, but it's also pretty common at pretty high levels. Mm-hmm. Chris, I'm sure you see the same thing.
No margin of error.
Exactly. You know, and I think that's one of the things that holds people back. And I think probably, you know, in terms of financial literacy, you do need to have some financial backing behind you to start your own business, because you're not going to make money right away. So, you know, if you're spending everything that you ever made, the idea of, you know, pulling the plug on your income and saying, I'm going to start a business tomorrow that I may not get paid it for a year. Well, you know, that, whether you're a risk taker or not, you can't do that because you've got this bad habit. It's called eating.
Yeah, right? You should probably ask the rest of your family if they think that's
general,
a good idea.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I do think that you know, we talk about fundraising, and we talk about the three Fs, you know, family, friends, fools. And, you know, there's a lot of parents of would-be entrepreneurs that if the entrepreneur came to them with an idea, like my daughter did, and said, Dad, would you help me fund this? You'd say, well, let me see your business plan. Let me see your financial plan. And I think maybe I can help you with that. And honestly, what I find a lot of the time is the parents are just waiting to be asked. But the kids need to ask, and they have to be – they ask, you get one chance, you know, and you better have your ducks in a row.
Yeah, parents obviously have a big part to play in teaching these lessons about economics and business. What part do you think the school should be playing?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, so much, I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, to me, you know, until I got to sort of algebra two, you know, which was interesting, math was really, you know, grade school math was really kind of dull. So why not have some of that you're learning be about something that kids can relate to, which is, you know, making money and spending money. As I said early on here, they're great consumers. So let's take math programs and let's understand what markup means. Let's understand what sales tax you can do. Multiplication and division. Understand the gross profit margins. I mean, it's simple stuff, and those are really easy concepts. Why not make that part of the math program? Because kids can relate to that, and you're teaching it anyway.
Yeah. A lot of times it's the difference between revenues and profits that seem to be one of the biggest challenges. Hey, I sold $100 for the stuff today, so I've got $100. Well, not exactly. But, you know, and reminding people of what it cost to get that product on the shelf.
No question.
In fact, that's one of the things Tommy runs into, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. And I think that gross does not equal net. And I think that's one of the early lessons. But I think that's one that unfortunately, even people much older than Tommy have forgotten that part of the equation.
Pat, do you have any suggestions for parents who want to help their kids start a simple business? You know, what type could it be, like yard work or shoveling snow, that kind of thing?
Well, you know, great question. You know, first off, buy the book, you know, available on Barnes Noble and Amazon, so you can get it there. And then if you like it, write me a good review. You know, it's
spoken
why not?
Like a true entrepreneur.
Well, you know, hey, that's right. I didn't get into writing books to get rich or famous, but I would like to sell a couple of them. You know, I think that the any little money earning that a child does, once they have the satisfaction of having that money in their hand, and then having a purpose for it. So, like right now, I have three grandkids, and my son-in-law is a stickler for this. So, you know, they have three jars when they get their little any kind of a gift from a friend or for their birthday or any little chore, they have money that they're going to give to charity, money that's for savings, and money that's for spending. And I think that, you know, if you sort of set up the three jar system with your kid and they start making money and understand that the savings drawer or the savings jar is a long-term play and the spending is for that special thing. You know, back when I was in high school, when we were buying albums, you know, I always had a jar there. It was like, you know, I had an album I wanted, so I, you know, part of my grass clipping money would go in there. And it was like when I had $4, I headed over to Shillitoe's basement store and got my albums were then $2.89. You know, that dates me a bit, doesn't it?
Oh, well, Pat, thank you for joining us this
evening. Oh, you're very welcome. Great to be here. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Chris.
Pat Burke with Burke and Schindler. His new book is called Swing for the Fences, An Economic Tale. After the break, do the recent gains in U.S. manufacturing mean industry is making a comeback? And in Focus on Technology, how a GPS-like device is making it safer to diagnose and repair electrical problems in the heart. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.